What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast, where I get to interview amazing people and help share their wisdom with the world. Let me know your takeaways and feel free to connect with the guest. I'm aiming to build a community around coaching, self-development, leadership, where people are not afraid to be their most authentic versions of themselves. You can find us on video by searching the Davidson Hang podcast on YouTube. Welcome and enjoy the ride. Hey, welcome listeners. I'm excited to bring to you Evan Kelsey, who is a Senior Director of Global Accounts at Seismic Software, which is a sales enablement tool, which I'll let Evan get into that more. I'm sure he's more of an expert than I am. But we met through the Sales Success community. So shout out to Scott Ingram. I appreciate you for, I know when I signed up for the conference, I reached out to Evan because I was like, oh, you know, I listened to your episodes and I also work at LinkedIn and Evan is a former LinkedIn employee. And he said, wow, like, I guarantee you this will change your life. Like, this will be a pivotal moment for me. And yeah, he's right. I would say my sales career since the conference has drastically changed for the better. So thanks, Evan. Really appreciate you.
Hey, you were the one seeking the knowledge. So you get the reward.
Yeah. And then I remember I met you at the conference and we had some drinks and yeah, you know, you're so nice. I think a lot of people, or at least a lot of the sales engineers that I'm friends with and people out that aren't in the sales industry, a lot of people think, oh yeah, salespeople are like cocky, they're like overconfident, like they think they're like hot stuff. And it's interesting because I always have to try to correct them. I always say, no, I mean, I don't know why you think that. Like, you know, that's not my experience, right? So, you know, you're one of those people who clearly you know, embodies, like, I would say, like, humility and, you know, a service mindset and mentality. But, we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll dive all into that.
I'm glad you're not talking to me in my 20s. Probably a different story. But yeah, 30s, I matured a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so walk us through, you know, what made you join Seismic? You know, I know you had you've had a pretty successful career, but what made you choose Seismic out of, you know, the millions of companies out there?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think probably fundamentally it's that Seismic sells fundamentally helps sellers sell better. And I knew from, you know, my previous career, you know, my entire sales career that what they solved was just a fundamental problem for salespeople to be effective in their jobs and to actually do what they should be doing and what I love to do, which is sell and kind of help my clients solve problems for their businesses in a transformational way. And I was looking at other companies in other industries where, you know, my end user would have been a, you know, somebody in like an engineer or a product designer or somebody in HR or somebody, you know, great functions. But the idea that my end user would be a salesperson and to really help enable that salesperson just lit me on fire. And I love the mission of helping sellers sell.
Yeah. I know when I worked at Cheetah Digital, while we were a client of yours, and you know, the sales enablement tool, I know the sales enablement team was really passionate about it. You know, unfortunately, like, I think they just signed on and then I ended up leaving the company, but I remember it was a really big deal and everyone was really excited for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's a fun industry because your conversations are fundamentally oriented around how to help the company grow better. You know, the conversations, you know, sometimes center around cost savings or reducing risk in the business, but more often it's a conversation about how do we take the barriers away to help you grow? And that's a really fun conversation to have. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of material out there that the companies themselves put out about how they plan to grow that, you know, you can use as conversation starters, in conversation, you know, continuers in a great way and get into these kind of more rich discussions about, you know, fundamentally what are the barriers keeping the company from growing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be exciting. So it sounds like you've worked with a lot of different types of end users and decision makers and stakeholders. So it sounds like working with marketers and sales revenue generating people, it seems like that's your favorite type of client so far?
It's certainly the client that I understand the best, because I'm in those shoes today, and I've lived that life my entire career pretty much, and so you're familiar with it, and then you're also passionate about it, and fundamentally, if you can, you know, I believe that if you can help remove some of the administrative barriers and kind of efficiency barriers to helping your people, you know, serve their clients the best. Those clients, they get a far profoundly better experience. But fundamentally, they're able to actually, you know, get the, you know, the pieces of business that they need, the pieces of technology that they need, you know, to put the process and the people in place that they need to be able to help their companies grow. And if everybody's approaching sales in the right way in terms of client service first, and how do I help you solve your biggest problems, then naturally the right solutions are going to flow to the right types of customers in a much more streamlined way.
Yes. Yeah, so sounds like you help out a lot with the process portion of a business, right? You know, obviously the right people is important. And then, I think process is something that I was always like afraid of going into, you know, being in sales. I'm like, oh, like they'll just like me because of my charisma, right? But they're that's not always
charming guy.
Right. But it's funny because I think as a more junior salesperson, I was always kind of like running away from process. I was always kind of like, oh, I'll figure it out. I always find a way. I'm creative. You know, I can get the right people involved. But then I find myself reinventing the wheel a lot of times and just spending so much time and energy, you know, just I'm like, all right, I need a process. So I would say this year I finally like have embraced more of a process. But I don't know, for some reason I was always like afraid of that word. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I've gone through the same journey where I think for a large part in my 20s I was selling largely based on instinct, and I was still a seeker of knowledge and kind of best practices, but I think it was much more instinctual than it was process driven, and that made for, you know, a lot of variable experience from customer to customer of mine, and a very reactive a much more reactive than it should have been approach to my book of business. And when I kind of got far more disciplined about it, I actually found that it became putting that structure in place, because I've got 4-year-old twin boys, like humans like structure. They actually respond well to structure. That putting that structure in place freed my mind to be strategic in my thought about how to help my customers best. And and in reality, you know, that's kind of a personal process journey. But when I think about, you know, selling technology, a lot of this is fairly what I did, you know, for many years, was I was just slinging software, as it were. And you weren't really thinking about the change management that had to occur for that software to be successful. And that's where real change happens. The technology can underpin it, but there always has to be a process change and a change in mindset by the people for true transformation to happen with whatever you're selling. And so, you know, when I'm thinking about that's why it's kind of fun to be in the space that I'm in, is when I'm thinking about, you know, the actual capabilities of our software, and those are great, and those are, you know, best in class, and we talk about them a lot. But it's always, I try to always talk about it in the context of, you know, the biggest barrier to just doing anything to help you grow, from a technology standpoint, is around change management. Mm-hmm. And thinking about the process on their side, on the client side, to be able to make them successful in you know, implementation, in ongoing you know, journey from level one, level two, level three, with your approach to sales enablement, and what needs, you know, what processes need to change that are broken today, and some maybe not broken, and what, you know, what needs to change in the mindset of the people, of how to make, you know, how to really think about enablement more broadly and less tactically. And that it's a really fun conversation to have, but, like, you know, process is always the biggest challenge, but has the biggest reward, I think, of any sort of change. It's pretty easy to just write a check for a piece of technology, but the hard part is actually the change management involved in making that transformation happen.
Wow, that's a good refresher. So much value already. Yeah, because sometimes, you know, when you're in the weeds too, or when you're in it too much, like, you lose sight of the actual change management aspect of, and you know, especially because I'm in SMB, right? So I don't really think about it like that. But you're right, right? It's more of the transformation of the whole company as a whole, right? But sometimes, you know, salespeople, we get into our, you know, we don't really think about, like, okay, like, now that I've sold the deal, like, how can I ensure that, you know, it's at the org-wide level, right? Instead of just, oh, you know, this is just a check the box, like, oh, you know, we offer this benefit now, or, oh, we have this, like, we can move on to the next thing. That's it.
All right. Yeah. And how do you align? I mean, it's sales 101, but it's actually really hard to do, is how do you truly align the benefits of what your solution provides to the strategic priorities of the business in a tangible way. You know, every business wants to, you know, grow revenue, cut costs, and reduce risk. But, like, how does that actually translate in real life terms to the people that you're talking to? And what do they really care about? And how can they articulate to you, you know, how those strategic pillars translate to them? And then, you know, where your solution provides probably a variety of value, but how can you really take, you know, I can really kind of link up those pieces so that the people that you're talking to actually understand, well, if we were to just, you know, write a check for a piece of software, like, okay, well, that's day one, but how does this long-term align to where the company is going, and how does it make it more competitive? How does it, you know, gain more market share? How does it decrease, you know, competitive threat? Like all these really interesting things. And you kind of got to realize that it's a, you know, every organization of some size, there's a technological reason to make a purchase, or there's, like, a, you know, kind of probably tangible physical benefit to make a purchase. But then there's also this whole political environment that your people, your advocates have to navigate, because, you know, unfortunately, many people within these companies, they view it as zero sum in terms of if they are changing processes that they're used to, then that benefits colleagues of theirs that they may not want to have benefit for. And so, you know, you really have to think, you know, I'm trying my best to, like, think through, all right, how do I get in front of those conversations that my champions are going to have internally, and get in front of the messaging that needs to occur to make this, you know, transformative value non-threatening to a bunch of people within the organization.
Yeah, that's huge. I think you're right, right? Especially it's the concept of was it sunk cost, right? It's like, mm-hmm. we've invested so much time into these existing policies and systems and software. It's like, you know, I wouldn't want to change because I've already spent like XYZ amount of hours on it. So, you know, how can you convince me that this, you know, and sometimes you piss people off, right? By, you know, being that new guy that's like, oh, you know, I got this shiny new widget that's going to solve all your problems. That's interesting. And then I often hear a lot of challenges, especially with software companies, that, you know, the account executive and then the transition team, right? Like the implementation team. And so how do you maintain that you're having a good transition and you're keeping up to make sure that, hey, everything that I've sold you is in alignment with what I've said. Like, how do you go about that?
It starts with selling for the renewal. Like you're never selling for the initial purchase. Right. At LinkedIn, you know, every year we would have new product offerings that were very valuable, but, you know, required some new thinking and new change management that would have to happen on our client side. But I was always trying to keep in the back of my mind, like, all right, how am I positioning the value of this to where it's not overvalued and not undervalued? Like it will actually like meet the value that I'm positioning it as so that they will renew. When, you know, next year, the year after, the year after that, whenever I, you know, if I have the account, if I don't have the account at the time. And so it kind of starts there with how do I, you know, during the sales process, how do I make sure that I'm selling for the renewal and not for the initial sale? And then, you know, the biggest, like, one, you know, the biggest trope in sales is like when that handoff happens to your customer success or the people who are actually responsible for kind of ongoing support and implementation. Like how do you help them understand the value of where, how you've positioned, you know, what you're selling. And again, it goes back to, helping them understand the pillars of the company and how they are going to grow. Or, you know, if you're in another business, how you're going to, you know, what are the cost pillar, what are the cost savings pillars, what are the risk mitigation pillars. But for me, it's the revenue generation pillars. You know, what's going to help the company grow? What's fundamentally, you know, within the culture of the company that would, you know, help them align their messaging to the change management that's going to have to happen for, you know, this software implementation to be successful. And how, if I'm doing my job right, then I have a pretty good understanding of my champions and what they're going to get, you know, individually, like my champions at the account, like what they're going to get individually out of a successful implementation and adoption and, you know, metric driven success, of this piece of software. What that's going to do for them individually, what that's going to do for their business unit, their boss, their boss's boss, how do you make them look good? And then ultimately, how do we keep the alignment of the value of what we're selling to these corporate pillars that, the executives are telling everybody that they care about. And, you know, if you're selling to public companies, what are they telling, you know, Wall Street that they care about and how they're going to grow?
Yeah, I remember when you did for the Success Summit that just happened in October. You did a whole thing about the 10K, which I think is interesting. I think so. What do you think is a good ratio of like prep time to the meeting? Let's say you have like an hour scheduled meeting. Well, what's like a good ratio of preparation?
I would. It depends on the level of person you're talking to. You know, certainly I'm going to prepare more for a C-suite conversation than I would have to, you know, if given a limited finite amount of time, which is what we all have.
Right.
It's been one of the great things about the company I work for now is they actually, you know, I feel like they do a good job of taking a lot of administrative tasks off of your plate so that you actually get the chance to do the preparation that you've always wanted to do. Now you get the time to do it. And so I spoke to a C-suite, chief revenue officer a couple of weeks ago, and I probably prepared a full two full days before that conversation. I didn't do it all in succession, but I did it over the course of several weeks. But it was a 30-minute meeting, but I really wanted to hit on the points and be able to. Plot out if the conversation went in different directions, where we want to take it.
Do you use a decision tree? How do you plot those choices and things out?
I went to different areas of their. I started with their investor relations research and kind of what they were telling the street and what they were telling regulators about how they're going to grow. And so there was a bunch of different kind of bullet points there about growth and areas where they were doubling down. And then I based on research and interviews that I'd done with previous conversations with people below that person, I kind of knew where there was some low hanging fruit in terms of pain that we could talk about, barriers to growth, and then thinking a little more about what their technology ecosystem looks like and where we plug in to different integration points. So having all of that knowledge took me a while, and so then I also thought through where this person might be concerned today. So again, it's like, all right, you can have these corporate pillars, you can have this internal pain, but if it's not kind of top of mind for this person, then you're knocking on the door at the wrong time. And so I had been doing a lot of research over the course of several months around, all right, so what are the foremost thought leaders that this person would listen to or find credible? What are they saying about the future of selling and sales at companies? So let's go read what Deloitte has to say about the future of sales. Let's go read what KPMG has to say, or McKinsey or Bain has to say about the future of sales. And people, folks that if the conversation is kind of going off track, I can bring him back to, don't listen to me. This is what the foremost thought leaders are saying is important for the next decade.
What are your thoughts on, doing enough research and having a strong agenda to get your points across, but also being adaptive to things that come up? Cause ultimately, they're going to have questions for you. How do you keep that steady balance? So it's a good conversation, but they're not pulling you into, cause sometimes I don't know if it's a power play or something like that, but.
Yeah. Sometimes it's unintentional, but sometimes I think it is intentional that they pull you in down rabbit holes.
Yeah.
And it's mostly driven based on what's top of mind for them that day. Right. I find that executives that as long as you are acknowledging that you've heard the question and you've heard the statement and you're able to kind of summarize it back, that gains you the credibility to then move the topic in a different direction. Or what I really find interesting is X. I don't find executives any more or less willing to not pursue, a different topic during the conversation, as long as you are acknowledging that you're hearing what they're saying about the current topic that you're talking about.
Okay, so you can acknowledge it, but you don't have to spend all of it, right? So you just quickly address it, you're not going.
Or if it's a rabbit hole topic where you're just going to get deeper and deeper into the weeds. And I've found them, generally to be pretty open to accepting it, which is, this is a really important topic. But this is a topic that we need to spend far more time on to actually get deeper into, where, But that, you know, if you can relay in their minds, like the rabbit hole topic is actually directly related to this other really important pillar that your executive leadership is talking about, then they're willing to kind of transition with you throughout the conversation, and to keep them, you know, keep them focused on what's going to mean the most to them, which is, you know, doing things that their C-suite executives or their board members, you know, have said are really important, or doing things that, you know, the smartest people in the space say is really important to kind of get right. You know, the subject matter experts there. And so you're usually, whatever rabbit hole you're kind of about to go down, you can usually say like, well, that's actually a symptom more than it is a cause. And the cause is X, you know, and you bring it back to like another pillar.
Gotcha. Okay. And this actually might be related, but I know you're pretty well known for having these monster mega deals, as Jamal would call it. what advice would you give, like just general advice to salespeople who want to have a higher average selling price, you know, that maybe have trouble, I guess what LinkedIn used to call multi-threading, or, you know, what LinkedIn calls multi-threading, and getting buy-in? Because I sometimes, you know, let's say they have like a certain amount of budget, but they're not thinking like, hey, there's actually other departments that this impacts as well, not just your department.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that question. I mean, again, you have to go back to what is it about the fundamental value of what you sell that is going to align to what the people at the highest levels of the organization are saying it is mission critical to get right. To survive as a business, you know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So like, you know, food and water and shelter, like are those big pillars that they're placing the big bets on, right? So how do you align with the fundamental value of what you do to that? And if the if that connection is quite squishy, then drop it down a level, right? So, all right. So then what is it about the particular head of the department you're selling to that they would find most compelling about what you're selling, you know, because if that's still squishy, you got to drop it down a little more. And, you know, at the end of the day, the people that even if you're talking to people who are four or five or six rungs down from the CEO, as long as you can chart a path to how, you know, how it makes their boss's boss or their boss's boss look good, or you know, a key leader in another function in another organization that your person needs to work really well with, like, you know, how do we help them look good? How does this, you know, make them, how does it help them execute on their goals? That's where, you know, you're starting to unlock the bigger picture value of getting your people to think less about, you know, solving a fire I have today, which is more kind of like a me oriented exercise, to really think about, all right, how do I set the company up a little better for the long term, which is fundamentally a we style of thinking. And, in every sales deal, it's really, really hard to keep from being single threaded, especially if what you're selling is could be considered a point solution and not a platform. It's going to be hard. But if you're selling something that's more point solution than it is platform, you can still get bigger deals done as long as you're arming your champion or set of champions there with this knowledge, with this kind of messaging and kind of helping them articulate back to you, you know, how this actually helps people way far up the food chain from them look really good or accomplish their goals, you know, or avoid a bunch of risk. you know, that's where that we thinking versus me thinking transition happens.
And this might be related to what you're sharing with us now, but how do you go about like the budget question, right? Like if they say like, hey, I have X amount of budget, or then, you know, the first initial call, they're just like, hey, like, just let me know how much it is so I can figure out if this even makes sense to have this conversation. And then do you always elevate it so that way you're not, you know, I guess, yeah. I mean, that's
I'm usually really, if they unfortunately come to the call with that type of mentality, most often, most likely, they're not worth the pursuit. Because I find that there's, you know, there's two, I think Brian Burns said this, there's two winners in a deal, the company that wins and the company that gets out first. And if you're selling something that actually is differentiated in the market, and is worth a premium price or premium value, then dealing, you know, dealing with somebody who is clear, it's clear that they care about cost first, and not value, is probably not going to be worth your time. And you're going to spend a lot of time, you spend a lot of time with deals. And I, you know, I certainly did this in early on in my sales career, spending a lot of time with deals and companies where, they viewed what we did as a commodity, and they weren't focused on the value of it. And you end up spending a lot of your cycles and spinning your wheels, where, you know, getting to a deal that is not, you know, not great in terms of its dollar value, and that you end up having to ask for special, you know, consideration, special pricing terms, special, like invoicing terms and things like that, for a deal where ultimately your leadership is going to look at it and just go like, there's a lot of hair on this deal, and I don't really know, you know, what value wasn't sold, you know, at this point. And it doesn't make you look very, very good. And I, you know, even to this day, I struggle with some of those deal cycles, but like you fundamentally have to be looking for, those advocates, those champions, those influencers who are focused on value, and then find those ways to differentiate, you know, helping convey that differentiation, and that unique value to them, versus the ones that are naturally going to put you in a box with everybody else.
How does one get out earlier, like much earlier? I mean, I think obviously some of it is experience, right? Like, you know, you do it enough times, you're like, all right, this looks like something that I probably shouldn't. But I think, like, to your point, people struggle with that their whole sales career, right? Because sometimes it's, you know, it comes to you, whether it's like an inbound or, you know, it's a deal that sometimes looks good on paper, but then I don't know, like, how do you?
Well, it depends on the market that you're selling to. So if you're selling something that is in a very established market, and it's been an established market for a very long time, and there actually isn't that much differentiation, then that's the kind of world that you have to live in, right? You know, like, I'm from Indiana, man. Number two yellow corn looks a lot like other number two yellow corn. Right. But if you are selling something that's differentiated, and that differentiation has a lot of value, you're needing to get in front of that, or kind of, you know, to not get caught in commoditized sales cycles. You know, that's where getting good at getting your messaging to people who are higher in the organization, getting your, you know, if that takes getting your executives involved or your investors involved in getting that differentiated messaging higher up in the organization, you know, that's what you got to do, or getting it broader in the organization, because you're finding areas, you know, overlapping areas of value, to where, you know, it's not just this one job function that's going to benefit from it. It's going to be, you know, multiple functions, multiple personas in the organization that are actually going to value from that uniqueness of whatever it is you're selling. And that was, you know, that was a revelation at LinkedIn for me, for certain, you know, things that I was selling. That was it's a revelation here at Seismic for me, where, you know, it's not just kind of your typical ICP or like, you know, your typical persona that gets value out of it. It's actually, you know, a lot of different types of folks that could potentially get value, and to keep focused there and to help, you know, to help understand, help your people at the client understand that, like, that those people get value out of it. And so they need to be exposed to it. It can't just be you who understands the value.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm sad that we're coming up on time, but I do have something that I really enjoyed is when you talked about, you know, being a people manager versus being an intentional IC. So I'm curious, what advice would you give to people who, you know, they are people managers now, but they do miss like being an intentional IC? It's sometimes like maybe they don't want to have to deal with as much headache and kind of just want to just be reliant on themselves.
I mean, you still deal with a lot of headaches as an IC. It's just different types. You know, I think where I really at this point in my career, I really loved, I continue to love and am very passionate about being on that front line with clients and solving their, you know, helping solve their problems and having those conversations with them on a continuous basis and serving them in a great way. Getting removed from that, from that front line, you know, it was really hard. Like I could tell within the first few months that I was really missing being on that front line, having, you know, I think we joke like having the jersey on and being in the game. And that was something I really struggled with. And I wasn't finding as much joy for you know, the frontline leadership role, which, you know, that joy really should come from, if you read the studies like that, the joy comes from being able to coach your people and just really enjoying the limited amount of coaching time that you have with them. And to some degree, the hiring process and being able to hire a great person and, you know, so you're hiring and developing. And if you like that, those are the two areas where you have to really love, and the love for those areas kind of have to be greater than the joy you're going to get out of being an individual contributor for you to really, you know, enjoy the role. And for many people, that's the case. And like, I'm very glad for that. And it was just, for me, I could tell that the joy that I was getting out of those two things did not nearly, you know, fulfill me as much as being, you know, being on that front line and getting the joy out of working with those clients, you know, up front.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that, or sometimes people don't think, like, being a top IC, like individual contributor, you impact so many people. But some, you know, sometimes people don't realize, like, I know, like, all the top performers at all the companies I've ever worked at, like, they had so much influence and so much, you know, not only like inspirationally for all the different, you know, sales reps out there and beyond, but it's different, right? It's not as maybe as it's not as obvious, but, you know, when you really sit back and unpack, like, the impact is huge. So I always think about that. And, you know, I know some individual contributors that like love doing that. And, you know, they mentor and they coach and they still do all these things, but, you know, I guess there's less of the politics like involved, right? Or maybe there still is, but, yeah, so it's interesting.
There's less, but yeah, you're right. Like there's still so many ways in which you can, coach and develop talent as a high performing individual contributor. I kind of view it as, to some degree, like if you're a frontline manager, the people you're supposed to be developing, talent are the salespeople on your team. Right. But if you're an individual contributor, the talent you're supposed to be developing are your clients, like the key people at your clients, and develop their skills to navigate their own organization and get better at selling internally, you know, for the change that they want to happen. And that to me is, you know, super exciting.
I love that reframe. I haven't thought about it like that, but when you frame it like that, that's pretty empowering. Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Well, thank you, Evan. Definitely we'll have to have you back for round two. So much value, and I know, you know, this episode will be loved by many. So I appreciate all your contributions, your perspectives, and yeah, man, you're always adding value. It's like in your DNA, you know.
You are too. It's been an honor to be on, and you know, looking forward to celebrating with you. Hopefully, when your year finishes up here.
Thank you, Evan. Yeah.
Thanks, Davidson.
Well, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe and let me know what your thoughts are. If there were any takeaways, I welcome all positive and constructive feedback and hope you enjoy. Stay tuned for more interesting stories and guests. Take care.